Welcome to the For Narcotics Anonymous podcast. Here we share audio recordings of NA members sharing their experience, strength, and hope. If you are a drug addict or think you have a drug problem, you are welcome to attend an NA meeting. Go to www.nahelp.org/meetings to find a meeting near you. On this website, you will also find more information about the Narcotics Anonymous program. Thanks for listening to this recording.
It's going to take me a minute. Even after all this time, you know, I still think it's about me when I stand up here. You know, I think it's about what I'm going to say and what y'all going to think about me. And so I went in the bathroom and I did my box breathing, you know. And then I did the thing I always forget to do, which is pray. So that should kick in any second now. But I'll try to get through if it doesn't. I was really thankful that I was asked to share here. It's been a long time since I've shared outside of my old home group. And I was thankful for that. And I was really thankful for Stacy. She spent all day yesterday driving back and forth to the airport. Back and forth to the airport. And meeting strange people she never knew. And, you know, just being friendly and inviting. And I was really grateful for that. So, Jim used to tell me, just tell your story and don't jazz it up. So that's what I'll try to do. I got clean in 1981, and I never thought that would happen. I'd never heard of a 12-step fellowship. And how I found it is the way that a lot of stories in my life began. I met a guy. And for once, it actually turned out okay, because he told me about this fellowship he went to where he didn't have to drink anymore. I thought, that could be useful. Drinking gets in the way of my using. You know, and I don't like the side effects of drinking, you know, the toilet and all that kind of stuff. So I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll check it out. And I was living in Flint, and I went to my first meeting, and it was in a church. I'm thinking, oh, this is not going to work. I've tried that before. It never worked. It never stuck. You know, and I sat outside that meeting in my car, and I remember seeing the people go into the meeting, and they didn't look like I thought they were going to look like. You know, I thought they'd all be old men in trench coats or something. You know, and some of them were younger than me, you know, and they looked normal. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe, but I don't know what I'd say to those people. You know, I don't know anyone there. What do I do? So I sat in my car, and I thought about it, and I thought about it, and they came out of the meeting, and they went home. I thought, oh, well. And so this guy calls me up and said, did you go to the meeting? And I said, no. And he says, well, I'll take you to the next one. And, you know, God knew how to get me to a meeting. You know, say what you will about, you know, we should go to the meetings for the right reasons, but any reason that you go to your first meeting is the right reason. So, you know, I went to the meeting, and, well, before I went to the meeting, I wasn't sure I'd be okay, because I'm a nervous person. I'm really nervous right now, you know. And I was really nervous, and I thought, you know, I ought to do something about that before I go to the meeting and say something stupid. So, you know, I used. And he picked me up, and he said, do me a favor, I want you to go to the meeting, but please don't say anything. And I said, that is not a problem. Yeah. And I don't remember much of that first meeting, but I do remember the feeling I had at that meeting. I remember these people were nice to me, and they didn't know me, you know, and they were all welcoming, and they shared honestly. I mean, they shared in ways I would never share with my best friends about stuff in their life. I would not tell you. I would not give you ammunition. You know, and they were sharing it back and forth with each other. And then they hugged. Well, no, they didn't hug there. Excuse me. They shook hands at this fellowship because this was not Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, I thought maybe. No, thank you. I thought maybe I ought to come back to another meeting and at least check it out. And I thought, you know, maybe I ought to come back without using anything so I can kind of focus on what they're saying. And I knew something intuitively that in order for anything to work in my life, I had to quit using. Now, nobody told me this. I didn't hear this in these meetings. But I knew I couldn't use and get a new life at the same time because using was the problem. It was the problem. And even I had to admit it. I took years pretending it wasn't the problem. It was you. It was my ex-husband. It was my job. It was my parents. It was Flint. Well, it was, but, you know, it was Flint. It was everything but using because I could change all those things. You know, and I did. I changed my ex-husband. His first name is X. You know, I changed my ex-husband. I moved to a different part of Flint. Didn't change anything. I can change people, places, and things. But what I couldn't change was me. And I was at that point, and I think we all get there, where it's like, oh, shit. What am I going to do? You know, I don't want to live this way anymore, but I don't know how not to. I would wake up in the morning, and I would say, I'm not using today. I am not going to use. I'm going to change my life. Everything's going to get good. And 10 minutes later, I'd be pulling drawers out. You know, I'd be on the car floor. You know, and every single day it was like that. I actually decided before I went to this meeting that I was going to get clean on my own. And it was winter in Flint, Michigan, and my mom lived in West Palm Beach, Florida. And I thought, I have a good idea. I'll go to Florida, and I'll get clean. And I stayed there for several weeks. I had a job that I was, addicts are really great employees. We really are. We're either the worst employee or we're the best. And I had a job where I could say, I'm not going to be back for a month, and they'd say, please come back. So, you know, I took advantage of that, and I left. And I got to Florida, and I quit using everything. I got off all the hard drugs, all the drugs I was told I could, you know, you can't get clean when you're using that. And I got off of all of them. But I did drink, because that's not really a drug, right? Alcohol's not a drug, right? And everybody drinks. And I was so amazed how easy withdrawal was. I expected to be really sick. Of course, I was really drunk, but I expected to be really sick. And I came back, and I really thought I had done this. And I came back, and I was going to change my life. I had three small children, and I loved them, and I wanted to be the mom that I wanted to be. I wanted to be there emotionally, not just physically, but emotionally there for them. I wanted to do a good job. I have had a talent, and I wanted to use that talent, do a good job instead of just getting through. And, you know, I wanted to, I just had a whole list of things I wanted to do. And I got back, and in a couple of weeks, I was back to using. And that was my first bottom, because I have a theory. You won't read this in the basic text. But I have a theory that as addicts, we bounce. You know, we hit a bottom, we slam on the ground, and we bounce back. But have you ever bounced a ball and just let it go? It'll go up and down and up and down and up and down, down. And finally, it just rolls. And I was still at the up part. I could still come back. But I was beginning to wonder if I could really ever just quit using. You know, I'd always told myself that lie. I can quit anytime I want to. I just don't want to. And when you stop believing that, when you stop believing all the lies you tell yourself in order to justify using, then you know you're in deep trouble. And I was there, and I didn't know what to do. And that's when I was introduced to this meeting. And I went to the meeting, and I went home. And in 1981... there were very few hospitals that would take using addicts. They didn't want us because we die during detox, and they didn't want us. And I was in the middle of a 2-year divorce, and I knew my husband would use that against me if I went into any kind of detox, or at least I thought he would. And I just didn't know what to do, so I just kicked on my couch. And I'm here to tell you, and that's maybe not the best thing to do, but it's what I did, and it worked. And, you know, I did it by, I'm not going to use for the next 5 minutes. And a couple times is I'm not going to use for the next minute. And yet, you know, I put together a couple days. And I was so excited. And this is where I get teary, and I'm sorry. But I was so excited, you know, to go back to this meeting and share with these people that I quit using everything. This was something I didn't think I could do, and I quit using everything. And I walked in the meeting, and I sat down. I was really quiet, and they all shared. And at the end, they said, does anybody have anything they want to share? And I said, yeah, you know, I kicked everything. I'm not using anything. And meetings are populated by people, and people are not perfect. So I don't blame this other fellowship for this, but what I heard is we don't talk about that here. I'll be okay. Give me a minute. Box breathing. And after the meeting, a couple other people came up to me and tried to make it okay. But, you know, instead of pushing me away, which it could have very easily, I have a temper. I'm Irish. And I have learned through working the steps how to control my temper, but not then. And I was determined I wasn't going to let that stop me because I had found something special. And I wasn't going to let anybody take it. And I kept going to meetings, and I kept listening, and I kept trying to make it work. And it, you know, in a lot of ways it worked, but the problem was the first step just didn't work for me. They talked about a substance, and I'm sure it worked for them. This is not a slam against this fellowship at all, because it's my ex-husband. I took him to his first meeting there. You know, a lot of people have used this fellowship. But for me, that first step was missing a key ingredient. I felt like I was this big puzzle, and right in the middle, there was a piece missing, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And, you know, I kept going back, and I kept trying to understand it. And, of course, I didn't ask any questions. I didn't talk to anybody. I was scared to death of these people. You know, some of these people had years of what they call sobriety. They had years of this stuff. And I just didn't know how to explain to them that I just wanted to use. You know, they wouldn't take me seriously if I said I wanted to use. That's a joke. Anyways, I kept going back to these meetings and hearing their first step, and they talked about this substance. And I knew from my own experience that I was quite able to. I mean, I had my drugs of choice, don't get me wrong. But I was quite able, if I couldn't get that, to use something else and get the same result. So I knew it wasn't about a substance, but I didn't know what it was about. And I kept hunting, and I kept going places, and there was this club in town, and they catered mainly to this other fellowship, but they had meetings in this club. And I'd go hang out there because when my kids were gone with their dad, I was scared to be alone. I did not want to be alone because my mind is not my best friend, and I was afraid I'd go back to using. And there was this poster, and we were laughing about this last night. There was this poster on the wall, and it showed NA meeting, Sunday morning, 10 o'clock, and it had a picture of a cocktail glass, which I thought was ridiculous. I never drank cocktails. I never used glasses. And, that's what I gave somebody else so I could have the bottle. You know, and it had syringes on it. I thought that was really cool, and pills. And I thought, maybe this is some place I ought to check out. So I went to this meeting, and oh my gosh. This is 1981 in Flint, Michigan. And we didn't know this at the time, but it turned out to be only one of two meetings in the state of Ohio. Or Michigan, yeah. Excuse me. The state of Michigan. And they didn't know about, each group didn't know about each other. And the guy running the meeting, and I'm sorry, you were running the meeting, and he also had the box of literature, and he kept it, which was probably a good idea because there was only one of these four or five pamphlets and somebody would have stole them, you know. So he kept the literature and, you know, they took the preamble from this other fellowship and added the word drug into it. And it was just, and the whole meeting was basically about, well, you think that's bad, you know, it was that kind of meeting. And, you know, I kept going to it, but I'd go home and I'd want to use. But I kept going back, because I don't know, I just knew there was something there, but I didn't know what it was. And I wasn't working steps. I got involved. I met a guy. That would work, right? Recovery through osmosis, you know? And I met another guy, and I put on dances, I put on events, and I did all this activity thinking that that would be enough, but it wasn't. And I started getting really involved in all the gossip and what was going on in the meetings. And, you know, I just replaced my using friends with people in the fellowship, but not anybody with time, because I didn't know what to say to those people. I was afraid to be around them, and I thought I was much better off with people with my own clean time, you know, all of 3 or 4 months, you know. And we'd get together and hang out and go to bars and all that healthy stuff. And I got all these reasons to become resentful. And eventually I had enough that I'm thinking, this isn't working. I don't need this. And being a very frugal person, I'd never thrown my drugs away when I got clean. I put them in a box and I locked them because I didn't want my children getting into them. And I put them up in the closet. And that one night I'm thinking, smoke a little dope's not a big deal. I can do that. You know, it won't wreck my sobriety. And my late husband used to define sobriety as somber, serious, moderate, and not drunk. And I'm thinking, I'm all those things. I'm okay. And so I got that down, and there was a little weed left in it. Oh, it was old and stale and mostly seeds, and it was really bad. And I smoked it, and I got a headache. And I heard the neighbors 4 houses down arguing, you know, the tunnel hearing. And I felt awful. You know, I had this precious thing. I had actually changed my life, and now I just blew it. And I didn't know what to do with that. I was afraid to go back to the meeting and tell anybody. You know, I had my time. I had to protect my time. I had all of 2 months or some ridiculous thing, you know. And these people wouldn't understand. I didn't, you know, I just didn't know what to do. So I kind of went back to meetings, but I didn't talk. And I kind of started hanging out with some of my old using friends because they understood me. Yeah, and they had good drugs, too. And then one weekend, it all blew up. Everything that bad can happen to you happened. And I was actually, that was when the ball rolled. There was no more bouncing, you know. And Sunday morning, I got up and I said, this has to change or I can't live anymore. Jails, institutions, or death. And I knew them all and I didn't want it. And so I went back to that Sunday morning meeting, and he was there, that guy. And there was another woman there, and oh, I gotta tell you this part too. There was this woman that kept showing up at all the meetings I went to. She had blonde hair, she wore dresses, she was prissy, she was pretty, and she dated all the guys I dated. And she really had a problem. But yet, she was sitting in the meetings, and I would listen to her, and I'd hear all this stuff that just rang true, you know, and I'm thinking, she kind of knows what she's talking about, but I don't really understand it. Well, then she started going to these NA meetings, and I'm thinking, she's going to follow me everywhere. But she was there, and there were a lot of other people, and the meeting was going as usual, all the talk and the stuff, and he started the meeting. And he pulled out the literature, and he pulled out the little white book. And if you don't know what that is, ask somebody with time, and they'll tell you. And he pulled out the little white book, and I said I wasn't going to do this. He pulled out the little white book and he read, "When at the End of the Road." My whole life changed, absolutely changed, because that talked about exactly how I felt at that moment, and it talked about a possibility, and it told me that somewhere there was somebody who felt exactly like I did. And I was going to find that. I didn't know it was in the room at the time. I didn't know these two people were going to bring it to me. I just knew I had to find it, because I knew that would keep me clean, that was part of the piece that was missing. It was talking about a disease that I could understand. It wasn't talking about slips. Slips scared me. That's like a lady's undergarment or somebody slipping on a banana. And that sounds like an accident. And that terrified me. That meant I could start using and I had no control over it. So what was I doing trying to stay clean if it could just come up and jump up at me? And so I wanted to find some answers. And it was a really, really cool time in Narcotics Anonymous, 1981. And a lot of things started happening all at once. It was like this shining time. I mean, if I could give you 1 year of my life to every person in this room, I'd give you that year, because amazing things started happening. The biggest one was this woman and this guy went to a convention down in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia. And she kind of talked about going, and it sounded like a big party, you know. And of course, I was broke. I couldn't go to any conventions. And they got back on, I think we had a Monday meeting by then, because they got back on Sunday night or something. Anyway, I was crispy. My time is really hazy. But they got back from this, and she called me, which I found strange. She called me and told my babysitter to please make sure she comes to the meeting. And I don't know why she called me and why she wants me there, but okay, I'll go. And I picked up somebody. I was always doing that. The way I stayed clean was picking up other people and taking them to meetings. I mean, I had 9 months clean by now, and I didn't know how I was staying clean. And I was terrified, and I did anything I could think of to be around you guys, be around anybody in the program, and just try to fill my time and stop my thinking. And I picked this girl up, and then I took her to the meeting, and on the way we're talking. And she says, "So how do you stay clean?" And I'm going, "I don't know. I didn't know what to say." I'm sure I was always good at ad lib. And I'm sure I gave her some line, you know. But I'm thinking all the way to the meeting, I don't know why I'm still clean. I'm terrified. I'm afraid. Every morning I wake up and I pray, "Please, God, keep me clean." I didn't believe in God, but, you know, you pray. And I'm praying, "Please, God, keep me clean for today. I don't want to go back there." And they got to the meeting, and she sat down next to me. And she pushed this little white glossy book in front of me, just slid it over. And I've always been an insane reader. And I picked it up and I started reading it. And it said approval copy. And the first chapter was, "Who is an addict?" I thought they had followed me around. Somebody followed me around. This is how they were going to get me. You know, they followed me around and they saw all my actions and they knew everything about me, people, places, and things. And social acceptability does not equal recovery. I had a pretty socially acceptable life. I hid it all from everybody what I was doing. But, every line in that first chapter just hit me. And I knew that this is what I was looking for. Even the very first words where most of us thought we were addicts long before the first time we ever picked up. And it's like, yeah, you know, here I was, a little redheaded girl in a family with a redheaded father and a redheaded brother, and I was sure they adopted me. No, I really was, because none of them were like me. You know, I was different than everybody. And I thought nobody could ever understand me. And here's this, out of nowhere, this book that understands me. And I've been trying to read this other book. It was quite big. And I was trying to read that, and the language was old-fashioned, and it didn't make sense. And, You know, I tried to understand it because I was really desperate. I mean, I'm not kidding. I was desperate. And also, she brought back, the lady brought back paraphernalia. N.A. paraphernalia. Yeah, that was cool. Coins, you know, stuff. And they said, does anybody have any clean time? And I'm thinking, well, I don't have a year, but I got 9 months. And she pulled out a 9-month coin. And she gave it to me. And on it, it said, no addict seeking recovery need ever die. And it's like, yes, I'm home. You know, I don't know what I have to do, but I know where I'm at. I know where I can find it. And I was there. And things just, with them going back, and they came back, and they were so excited. They'd found the truth. You know, they found the answer, and they wanted to just give it away. And guess what happened? Nobody wanted it. You know, they were comfortable where they were. They didn't want to try this, and they didn't want to hear that maybe what they were doing wasn't the right way or being judged or whatever. And, you know, here these two people have just this amazing awakening, and they're trying to share it, and they're being rejected. And I honestly, when they first walked in the room that night, I looked at them, and for the first time, I seen what a spiritual awakening looks like. And that alone was enough to keep me going, you know, because I wanted that. You know, I'd gone to other meetings, and there's things I wanted, like her boyfriend or that car or live in that house. But this is the first time I had an example of the kind of life I wanted to live. So I just did what they did. And, you know, it turned out I was their newcomer. And I guess Jim said I was the first newcomer in Ohio or in Michigan, but I think Willard was. No? Oh, good, I beat him. Okay. But, yeah, and I just, whatever they said, I tried. You know, I just... And it started growing, okay. And every weekend, they would leave and go down to Ohio. That's where their home group was. And it wasn't fair because I couldn't leave. I couldn't go with them. You know, I had little kids, and I didn't have any money, and I had to work, and they left me home, and it wasn't fair. But they would come back and share all this stuff with me. And, you know, we started having other groups, and things started growing. And it was just amazing. And right away, I got introduced to service, but we called it keeping the meeting open. Yeah, and there was this thing, and I learned not to do this, but if you went to the bathroom and you came back out, everybody would applaud because you just got chosen to be chair or treasurer or coffee pot filler or whatever the service position was, so I learned to hold it. But, yeah, all kinds of things were going on, and my life was changing. It was starting to show. And I love the part in the 11th step where it says, it should show in the way you live your life. Recovery should show. And I'm not saying I was perfect or so much better or anything, but my life was improving. In fact, I ran into my lawyer in town one day, and he said, oh, my God, what did you do? You look so different. And it was just because, you know, when you get clean and your life starts getting better and you get that spark in your eyes, you know, and you hold your head up high and you're not always looking down at the ground and, you know, you're getting enough sleep at night and you get rid of the ashy face, you know, your life does change. And people notice it. The people around you are watching you all the time. And sometimes I think that's the best message I carry, is just being out in the world and showing that you do not have to die from this disease. And it really is. It will kill you. And right now is so, so scary. I keep saying all the time, I'm so glad I didn't get clean now. Number one, when I got clean, we talked about complete abstinence. You know, and it was real clear. Carol and Jim were like my first home group, but they were tough, man. They would not give me an inch, and they wouldn't give me the answer. That really ticked me off sometimes, too. But they decided, you know, I have a brain. It's clearing up. I need to think for myself, and I need to use recovery to make decisions. You know, not just let my thoughts make the decisions, but actually use recovery. And if I didn't know what to do, go talk to somebody. But be careful who you talk to. You know, you got to find somebody whose life you want to emulate. You know, and so I learned to do that. I started learning to make decisions. I started changing my life. I started doing everything they did. And it grew. It was just like it exploded. And it wasn't without trouble, believe me, because there were still those people around that didn't want to see it. Because why should Narcotics Anonymous be around? This other fellowship is just as good. And you are going to kill people. That's what they told us. You're going to kill people by telling them to go to NA. And part of the problem was there weren't that many NA meetings. So we made NA meetings, you know. And for years, I sat with a coffee pot in a church basement, hoping somebody would walk in and be able to share the message. And sometimes I was resentful over that, but I would sit there and read my basic text. And I always got something out of that meeting. And I also had a habit when I was using of always trying to find my dealer's dealer, you know, less steps. We were talking about different kind of steps, you know. And so when I got clean, I was introduced to some very, very special people. And, you know, I was introduced to the people that were working on writing the basic text. And it was amazing. I mean, first of all, there was these people with 2 and 3 years clean that, you know, were my home group. And then they introduced me to Bo and Greg and Joseph and Paige. And these are the people, you know, hundreds of people wrote the basic text. But the people I just mentioned, okay, let me ask you, have you ever been on a committee with 50 people? But there's like 4 or 5 people that actually make sure it happens. Yeah, they make sure the room's open, the coffee's cooked, the materials, the pens, the papers, the computers, whatever it is you need, they're always there. They don't come and go, they're always there. And those people were the ones who were always there. And I got to meet them, I got to talk to them, and I was amazed. They actually wanted to talk to me. You know, and they told me I was their book baby. They told me they wrote the book for me. And they did. And they wrote the book for you. And, oh man, I need a tissue. They wrote the book for anyone who was willing to try. You know, we took a word out of the, I heard this talk, but I think it should still be in there. They talked in the early editions of the basic text, they talked about an honest desire. Now, I realize as newcomers, we don't understand honesty completely. Thank you. We don't know honesty until we've worked through the 4th step several times, shared a 5th step, done an 8th and 9th step. But when I got to the point when I heard the one at the end of the road, I had an honest desire to find a new way to live. And if you don't have that, yeah, I'll use a tissue. Thank you. These are my napkins for the car. I had that honest desire, and I am so grateful because I didn't give that to myself. That is a gift from my God. You know, when I lost the desire to use, I didn't believe it. I thought you lied when you told me you quit wanting to use, that you lost the desire. I thought you figured out a way to live with it. And I woke up, I went to bed one night. I had a bunch of problems. I don't know. I spent my electric money on something else. You know, typical problems. And I'm there all worried and concerned. And I put my head down on the pillow and I thought, I didn't want to use all day. I never thought about using. And that was such a miracle. I mean, it'd been years. I started using when I was 12 years old. I never spent a day where using wasn't the foremost in my mind. And when I got clean, man, it was even stronger. You know, where you wake up and you say, I don't use. And all day long, you say, I need to go to a meeting so I don't use. You know, I need to call somebody so I don't use. And I went to bed, and I didn't want to use. And then it was like a couple weeks went by, and I thought about it. And that's when I realized, oh, my gosh, this stuff works. You know, they're not just talking at me. These steps aren't a bunch of sentences. They're not a bunch of rules. They're a blueprint that's very simple, and if I follow it, I don't ever have to use against my will ever again. And that was a miracle to me. That was my first miracle, was that the second step actually worked. And, you know, and I've gone through all the steps, and go through them again. So I got to tell this other story. I still wasn't going to talk too long. I don't know. I have no idea. Anyways, I thought I should write a force. Now, this woman, go back to her, she was in my home group. And she gave me really good advice, and I asked her a lot of stuff, but I never asked her to be my sponsor. Because I didn't really need a sponsor. Now, I just listen to what they say, and I'll do what they say, and I'll be fine. Well, I decided I needed to write a four-step, because I started waking up in the middle of the night with nightmares of all the stuff that happened to me when I was using. And I was scared, and I didn't want to live that way. So I'd gone to meetings, and of course, every meeting, somebody was talking about doing a four-step. So I thought, okay, so I was very lucky. We didn't have a lot of literature on four steps. We had a simple pamphlet, how to work in the four step. And I opened it up, and on the first page it said, go over the first three steps with your sponsor. That wasn't a problem. I didn't have one. And it said, don't use pencil. Use a pen. Don't erase anything. Scratch through it and go through it. You know, one part at a time. And I did that, and I went through it all. And, you know, I got really honest, and I'm thinking, I don't want to share this with anybody. And I thought, oh, that's simple. I'm never going to share it with anybody. I'll do the fourth step. I'll talk to God. We'll work it out. You know, it'll be fine. And so I wrote this fourth step, and I put it in the drawer. Do you know those things grow in the drawers? Yeah, they grow, they get bigger. And I went with this woman to Pontiac to a meeting, and we were driving home, and it's like The Exorcist. Did you ever see that movie where this voice comes out of this girl? This voice came out of me and said, I did a four step. Would you like to listen to it sometime? You know, and I'm thinking, you know, she's going to say, yeah, let's set up an appointment for next month. You know, something like that. And she says, yeah, I don't have to work tomorrow. Why don't I just come in when I drop you off? I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah. So I got the fourth step out. I said, okay, I'm just going to read to her, and I'll omit the parts I don't want anybody to know because I'll read it. You know, and it was really, really wonderful because after we started doing it and got into it, all the things I thought she would go, really? You did that? You know, or I was going to admit, I talked to her, and, you know, some of them she had done, and some of them we laughed, and we cried, and she shared her experience, and I shared mine, and it was amazing. It was like for the first time in my life, somebody knew who I really was, and they were okay with it. You know, and this is all from that little, simple four-step guide that the fellowship wrote. The fellowship wrote it. It wasn't written for us. It wasn't written by psychologists. It was written by using addicts who'd recovered, and they knew the things that they had to share in a four-step in order to stay clean. And they did. And I used it, and it worked. And, you know, for the first time in my life, I felt free. You know, I used to say freedom was just nothing else to lose. I think a singer said that. But yeah, Janis Joplin used to say that. But, you know, that's what I thought it was, and it wasn't. Freedom is nothing else to fear. You know, this stuff didn't own me. I had done these things, but I had to realize that it was addiction. And, you know, I'm not responsible for what addiction had me do, but I am responsible for what recovery has me do. And, you know, I had to let that stuff go, and there was a steps further on that I would make amends, and, you know, I could complete all that. It did not have to follow me around for the rest of my life. And that allowed me to become who I am. You know, and I did. I went through and worked all the steps, and I've done it several times. And each time, it's brought a level of freedom that I didn't expect. And I wouldn't have got that anywhere else. I got that in Narcotics Anonymous, and I got that because a couple people decided to bet their life on a program they didn't even know if it still existed. You know, they were willing to make that commitment. All the people during that time were willing to make those kind of commitments. We had very close fellowship, you know. We hung out with each other. We fought with each other. You know, we went through a lot of stuff together. But we were all we had, you know, and we needed to make this thing work. And it was a life and death situation. And I am so grateful that I got to get clean at a time where I wasn't given options. Because I would not have gotten clean. If you said, take this pill, it will help you, you know, take medicine for addiction. If somebody had given me that choice, I would not be clean today. You know, if somebody had said, go to a meeting a couple times a week. It's really important to get your life back together. Go to school, you know, take care of your children. Instead, I was told, you need to put your recovery first. Absolutely first, and everything else will fall in place. You see, I used to think that balance was offsetting one obsession with another. And it's not. It's about priorities. If I have my priorities in order, my life runs smoothly. No, I'll never be completely in control of my life. I have addiction, and it will always be there. But if I put my priorities in order, I have a direction on where I'm going to go. And my priorities are really simple. I have my higher power, my God. I have my program. Then I have my family. And as long as I do that, everything works. And to kind of end this, I'm not going to just talk about the olden days, but I do want to tell you about it's worth it. Because, you know, sometimes you go through some really hard times in recovery. You know, Bill was talking about it. You know, sometimes you think, why am I going through all of this? Look at, you know, I'm still having shit happen in my life, because guess what? It still goes on. Yeah. You know, and you meet these things and you think, this isn't fair. You know, it's like the little kid, this isn't fair. And I get like that. You know, it's not fair. And I've gone through some really hard things. The hardest thing was my husband passing. And he was an amazing man, and some of you know him. And he did tremendous things for this fellowship. And I did not believe my recovery would be as good as it is if it wasn't for him. But, you know, we didn't work each other's program. We worked our own program. But he was such an inspiration. And he had such faith in me that I tried to live up to that. And losing him was probably the hardest thing I ever went through. But I didn't go through it alone. You know, I had my two best friends with me the entire week he was in intensive care, and every day it was like, he's going to be okay, no he's not, he's going to be okay, no he's not, and it was a nightmare, and they were there for me, you know, always there for me, and I never had anything like that in my life, people that, you know, would set aside their own desires, their own needs, and be there for you, and I am so grateful for that, but I also got to do some really amazing things, you know, I had a daughter who's never seen me use. You know, and my other kids, most of them turned out okay. Yeah, I can't say, you know, addiction runs in families. And you cannot fix your own family. Believe me, I've tried. Yeah, I've tried. I love them all. I hate addiction, but I love the addict. And I've got to go all over the world. I've stood at the top of the Eiffel Tower. I've kissed the Blarney Stone. You know, I took the tram in Greece up to a mountaintop, and I got lost in Athens. I've gone to Alaska 4 times, and Hawaii. And, you know, I'm not bragging here. I'm saying these are things I didn't even know I wanted. You know, I've had dreams come true that I had no idea. I got one last story. When I married my husband, I was a city girl, Flint, Michigan. And he had a farm. And I moved to the farm with my three kids. His son decided to come move in with us. And I got pregnant. Yeah. And he tried to find babysitters, and they'd hang up on him and laugh. And we were living on this farm, and I looked out the window one day, and I said, are the cows supposed to be in the front yard? And I found out that what it was like to chase cows around, and they think it's hysterically funny to see humans chasing after them. And, you know, I got to, like I said, I got to do things I never dreamed I wanted to do. And, you know, today I live in Fort Worth, Texas, and I love where I live, and I work with my grandchildren, and I help them with their work, their homework, and I substitute teach, and I'm kind of retired, and, you know, and I get to come to things like this when people are nice enough to ask me, and I talk on the phone with addicts every day, and this is a life that's better than anything I ever expected. And it's all because those guys decided to write this stuff down, and that telling us to go to another program and change the word alcohol for drugs. And they said, that's not going to work. We need to actually make something that addicts can feel and touch and grow and share. And I am so grateful you are all here, and let me share and let me ramble on. But, you know, if I had anything left to say, I would say, please, 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 don't settle for the path of least resistance. You know, face it, do it, grow, and share. Thank you.